Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopton Hay. My guest today is Liliana Valenzuela. She's an award-winning poet and acclaimed Spanish translator of works by authors such as Sandra Cisneros, Julia Alvarez, and Denise Chavez, and many other writers. She is the author of the full-length poetry collection in two languages, Codex of Love, Bendita Venura, and the chapbook Codex of Journeys, Bendita Camino. And we'll also be discussing a book she translated by Sandra Cisneros, Letters to Martita. And Liliana, welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you so much, Hopin, for having me. Very excited to be here.
So I do want to start off with your poetry, because your poetry, this collection of poetry, this codex, is such a kaleidoscope of different stories. It's erotic. It's sad. It's about the love of a mother for her family. It's so many different things. And I want to know, how was this collection put together?
Yeah, good question and good commentary. I mean, I consider it kind of like a compendium of the past several decades, in which, you know, it's a book, but it's formed of other books inside, like a codex, like the ancient Aztec codexes, that I've always been fascinated how that history was preserved, even though, you know, when the Spaniards came to the New World, they burned a lot of books, but some of those survived and some of those were made afterwards. So I always was fascinated by that idea and the hand-painted codexes. So I consider this the codex of my life, my experiences as a immigrant from Mexico to the United States, the life before, the life here, my ancestors there, new experiences here. And it all came together under this one big book, big collection. And actually, my first chapbook, the Codex of Journeys Bendito Camino, was originally part of this larger work. But there was an opportunity to publish that one first. So that one came out first, Journeys about traveling and traveling in the world and being in the world as a woman and sometimes traveling alone. And then this Codex of Love that has all these different books. And then I included a new section of ekphrastic poetry inspired in photographs in this case.
So you've been writing poetry, I would imagine, your whole life. And I can recall when I was in junior high school, middle school, you write this poetry and then you sort of fall out of writing poetry. How do you sustain your life as a poet? Meaning, how did you sustain that passion for writing poetry?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it's something that comes naturally in our youth. But for me, through the ups and downs of life and different jobs and obligations as a mother, it was something that was always there for me, and something that still called to me. And when I would sit down to write, that's what would come to me more naturally. And then what was harder to do during those years was to publish it as a book, because of the particular way in which I started writing poetry in Spanish, which is my native language. That was easy for me, or came to me, because that's part of the tradition, or the tradition that I was raised in. But then the more I lived in the United States, I started also getting to know poets in English and being inspired by them and writing my own poetry in English. And so this collection is such a mix of poems originally written in English, some originally written in Spanish. So it was hard to find a publisher for that, to publish it, just as it was with the translations going in both directions, and for someone to really understand what I was doing. So the publication took a while, but I have been writing all along. And it's like poetry is like my witness, my companion, my inspiration, my solace, my everything. And I write in other genres, but poetry is my base, home base.
Well, it's so heartening to hear that, because the character in Martita, I Remember You, Karina, or Pofina, seems to have left that passion for writing behind. And you've been able to keep that passion going. So I guess maybe one of the lessons learned for those who love writing and is that don't ever give it up, that you can still do it on the side, on the weekends, early in the morning, late at night, that there is really no reason to give up writing if you love writing, because you can always write.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, because we all have a life, we have obligations, we have other things pulling us in different directions. But if it's something that really calls to your soul and gives you such nourishment and hopefully nourishes other people, there's always room for that. And writing is not as elaborate in some ways as, you know, trying to make a movie or a play where you depend on so many other people and you have to have lots of capital. And, you know, writing, you can always write.
And you don't need an iPhone. You don't need a computer. All you need is a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil.
Right. Yeah.
So please honor us with a reading. Let's start off with the poem Click. Striking worker assassinated. It's a photo based on a photo by Manuel Alvarez Bravo from 1934. So before you actually read that poem, or whichever order you want to talk to, how you were inspired by that photo to write the poem, please.
Yes. You know, I actually saw this photo at a gallery at the Harry Ransom Center. They have a big collection of Latin American art and photographs. And it was this, you know, it wasn't too big. It was like, you know, like yay big. But it was so in black and white, but it was so striking. And together with, you know, some of his other photographs. And seeing it in person, I guess, as opposed to seeing it on the computer screen and with the right lighting and just, you know, how they highlight an image in a museum, which I think makes it worth actually going to a museum, because it just had this big impact on me. And so this poem was inspired by that. And at the time, I was experimenting with writing this ekphrastic poetry. And so I would periodically go to a museum and with my pen and paper and just, you know, actually start writing inspired on whatever I saw. So this is one of those poems. It's called Click. Striking worker assassinated. Photo by Manuel Alvarez Bravo, 1934. Manuel just happened by, his camera around his neck, when the strike came to an end. The clash, thin youthful bodies versus hard bullets. At his feet, a young man in a neatly ironed checkered shirt, wearing pants with a belt, spills his blood on the pavement, expiring, passing away. Yet Manuel, with a click, instinctive and arbitrary, prolongs his life a few seconds, just long enough to place it before your eyes.
Well, that poem really caught me, because having seen those type of photographs, you know, throughout my life, going to different museum settings and stuff, and just thinking of the violence that exists in the world of today. And we can speak of that right now in terms of what's going on in Ukraine and how sometimes you're inspired not by always the happiness and the love, but also the sadness and the grief of life.
Right. And that's like what's so tragic about it, because, you know, especially when it's young people and losing their life for fighting for justice, for a cause, for better conditions, for whatever reason, and then to see them lose their lives so young, it just hurts particularly. You know, it doesn't matter what country, what place, what time, because this happened in 1934, and yet it also speaks to our time, that unfortunately these things keep happening, you know.
What is the experience like writing in two languages? For those of us who only speak one language and only write it in one language, trying to get your head around what that experience is like writing in two languages.
Yeah. Sometimes it makes you crazy. And sometimes it's fun because it's like a puzzle. It's like playing a game. And it's not easy, but I think it comes out of the need and the want to communicate, eventually communicate with someone. And so, you know, when I was writing poetry in Spanish, it was hard for me to translate it into English myself. It's easier going into Spanish, which is my native language. So I also wanted to communicate with people around me here and taking some writing workshops. I had to write it in English. So little by little, I start to get more confidence and getting some feedback and some reactions. And, you know, because my husband is American, and so at home, we first started speaking Spanish and eventually we transitioned to English. So it was also part of my home environment at that time, and then with my children. So, you know, I think English really came to also live in me and be part of my everyday experience. And I started dreaming in English and, you know, very much part of my life. But there was a time when I was like caught between the two worlds, where I felt like I was going mute and I couldn't say anything, because I was like, you know, when the impulse to write would come, I would be like, we're writing in Spanish or English. And so for a moment, a time period, I kind of stopped and was kind of frozen. And after that, you know, it was like a mini writing crisis. I was like, I'm just going to do it in whatever that first impulse comes in, and not think too much about it, and not try to judge it or to think about other factors, like, you know, who's going to read it or what magazine am I going to send it to, or like, you know, none of that matters. It's like, what is speaking to me about the situation, and just let it come in whatever language. And sometimes it switches back and forth and I just go with it. That has worked and has helped.
So reading the great collection Sergio Troncoso put together, the word I came out of from reading that collection is the liminal space. And that was a word that was used quite a bit in that collection. And I'm starting to see it other places. Were you in that in-between space?
Right. Yes, exactly. And also the Gloria Anzaldúa, one of the great Chicana writers and theoreticians, has said that that's talked about it as Nepantla, because in the Aztec cosmology, there was like the in-between place between, you know, I guess their heaven and hell. And so it was, you could be in this kind of limbo, but it was called Nepantla. Neither here nor there. And so she elaborates a theory about that, that it's a different space. You know, it's neither one nor the other, but that's where a lot of us are, either by reason of our birth, because we were born in places, in border states like Texas, or we came here as children or as young adults, and it's just part of our everyday reality. And then to write from there.
So what drew you to, you grew up in Mexico City. At what age did you come to the United States, and how did you end up in Austin, Texas?
Well, you know, I came following a man. The age old story. You know, I met my husband in Mexico, in Mexico City. He was living and working there. And, you know, he's from Michigan, Chicago area. And so then we decided to come here. I was in my early 20s. And so we ended up in the middle, you know, not the Midwest, not Mexico City, but Texas. And because of the, you know, we actually thought about Texas, New Mexico, or California, because he had gone to school in Michigan. And I was like, yeah, it's beautiful in the summer, but winters, no. I'm not going to move there. But, and then we decided on Austin because of its, you know, youthful culture, the music, the university, the Latin American collection within the university. And at the time I was studying anthropology. So, you know, it's a great university for that too. Yeah, so, Barton Springs.
Barton Springs.
The deciding factor.
So I had never read Sandra Cisneros before I started reading your translation.
Yeah.
And I know this is a spare book and you write it's in Spanish and English, but it just, God knows what I've been missing by not reading Sandra Cisneros. I mean, I was just so amazed. And I'm sure that the people who've been reading her for years are probably like, well, that may not be her best work, Hopeton. You're just getting, you know, your first exposure. So talk to me about your relationship with Sandra Cisneros and how you first became aware of her writing. Am I exaggerating how great she is?
No, I think she really, you know, has been a friend and a mentor to me and to many others. And she was one of the first who really portrayed that experience of Chicanos, Mexican Americans, and used combining the languages and done with such sensibility and perspective that a lot of us saw part of ourselves there. And she's, you know, a lot of people became writers inspired in her work. So it's not an understatement at all. And this particular book, I mean, I've been translating almost all her books. And we first met in Austin, you know, 30, 35 years ago, when she was living here and had just published House on Mango Street, but before she became famous because of it. So we were almost neighbors and we had a friend in common. So we, you know, it was a time where we had more time than money. So we could spend time together and, you know, just do easy, simple things like hang out and, you know, have coffee. And there was time. We had time, which was the great luxury. So we became friends and then she moved to California. And at the time I started translating, I thought, well, what I would really love to translate is literature, and I would really love to translate her work. And so I reached out to her, and just then she was looking for a translator for her, one of her short stories, Once 11, is one of her famous short stories. It's really wonderful. You can look for it. I recommend it. And then I translated her children's book, Her Pelitos, and then her collection of short stories. And from then on, you know, translated almost all her books, including this one that you mentioned, Martita, I Remember You, and it's Martita Te Recuerdo, is the bilingual edition, in which she describes this relationship between, you know, among three women, young women in Paris, in their youth, where they can barely afford to live there, but they just make do and have all these adventures and experiences. And then they keep in touch over the years through letters. And then they all go their different ways, but part of their soul, their heart is always in touch with this other woman and who left a big imprint on each other.
It was a bit of a sad story to see. You know, as I mentioned earlier at the beginning of our interview, this character, Karina, who our friend refers to, I believe, as Pafina, to have such high hopes, and the poverty of writing sort of pushes her away from writing, and her father not wanting to see her struggle so much and finally just leaving it behind with, you know, a good life with kids and a husband, but still, I guess when you're translating that sadness, that nostalgia sadness, talk about that experience of translating that.
Yeah, I mean, she said that because she had an earlier version of that story from years back, and then she reworked it, and that new ending came to her. And she said that it wasn't really what she expected. She herself was surprised. That's what she told me. You know, we've done some events together. But she just let the fiction, the story, guide her to wherever it needed to go. And that's where it went. Which is nice, because I think it's like, you know, for her, it's very organic. And it's like, some people write like they have an outline and they have a plot and they know everything that's going to happen. And other people let the story unfold and then the story itself tell you what it wants to be. And I think she's more that kind of writer.
And bittersweet.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was sad, but also I liked that ending because it was unexpected. I think that the more obvious choice would have been like, oh, and then she went back and she became a famous writer and everything was great, which would have been more after her own life.
Yes.
How it really turned out to be. But instead, she really led this character, Pufina, Corina, find her own end of her story. And yet, I think there's, to me, it wasn't so sad in the sense that I think Corina really is able to find a different kind of happiness and satisfaction. And just saying, like, just sitting here at this table, drinking my coffee on the weekends, everything's quiet, looking at the light. And yeah, this is also happiness, you know?
Oh, yeah, that book, I mean, I really, really like Martita, I Remember You. And that means now I will be looking for more Sandra Cisneros books to read. But let's go back to another poem and the desk drawer, because I have a desk drawer. And when you start going through the desk drawer, there's all kinds of stuff in there that's literally, Liliana, literally has been there since we moved into this house. So what was your inspiration for this poem, The Desk Drawer?
Well, it was an actual desk drawer just like that. my house, my parents' house growing up. And it was just like a mishmash of things. And you could tell that no one had really ever gone through it or tried to organize it or anything. And so to us as kids, it was actually kind of fun because it was like, oh, let's see what's in here. And you would just find like all these assorted objects. So you could, you know, summer vacation, you were bored, you could start playing or making some game out of whatever you found there. But then in this poem, it was actually, I was at a writing workshop and we started talking, describing objects. And so, you know, it seemed like a harmless thing, like the desk drawer, a drawer, remembering something from childhood. But then this other story came to the surface that really surprised me too. I was like shocked, you know, after I wrote it, I was like, wow, like, where did that come from?
I know, because I mean, if you start looking at those objects in the desk drawer, and of course, I want you to read the poem, there's stories behind those things in the desk drawer.
Right. Yes. I'll read it and then we can comment some more. The desk drawer. Something spoke of order in our home, like the dining room, la sala de las visitas, the clothes closets, neatly ironed and organized. Others spoke of a barely contained chaos, como el closet de la cocina, el refrigerador del comedor, por mientras, o el cajón del escritorio. Our friends laughed in disbelief. To us, it was normal. A mishmash, a bric-a-brac, anything homeless or lost, broken or torn, lived in the junk desk drawers. We used to spend hours sorting its contents. A mystery box, a sorting box, a find a toy box, I create a new game box, a boring day box. No one cared to put some order in it, and it lived undisturbed. My father kept my older half-brother locked in the top drawer, the only key, the only locked drawer. He lived there undisturbed for 20-some years to emerge. Evidence of letters, photos, and after Christmas thank you notes. Thank you for the new bike, Papa. Years of back and forth, air and sea, lies on top of lies. No longer a primogenita. What else didn't I know? My life not what it seemed. Where did the seat begin? El cajón con sus cosas. Su vida aparte, escondida en un cajón, el beso del perdón. Being faced by your children, the disconnect, the burning shame, the dread, the unsettling sting of not knowing, barely comprehending. What else do I not know? The Pandora's box of past sins spilling onto the floor. A barely contained chaos seeking light, fresh air. A rubber band, a broken toy airplane, an old leather wallet, dark and oily with its touch, a missing link.
Wow. Do you ever think about we're in such a digital age today that you will not find letters in your desk drawer anymore?
Yeah, I know. I mean, even for my children, it's like teaching them to address a letter. It's like, how do you do that? whenever they have had to send a letter, it's like, there's no relationship. Like, how do you even do that anymore? And it's sad because it is such an art, and it's going to be a lost art. The materiality of it, you know, like postcards and the different kinds of paper. And I'm a fool for paper goods and stationery. And but yeah, it's so much history and so much familiar history and friendships and literary friendships. And you know, it's a whole world. And Martita, too, they have the letters.
Well, maybe we can apply for a grant to teach the art of letter writing from the Humanities Texas.
I know. I love receiving letters. I'm postcard, and I still send them. But, you know, I think as writers, we just aren't into that kind of thing.
Well, I'm jealous of you because I literally can't remember the last time I received a personal letter. I have all kinds of texts from my daughters. I mean, it's really is text.
I know. I think it's mostly amongst my writer friends. We still write to each other. And it's special. Me.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the last poem I'm going to ask you to read is Today, Stop the River in Its Track. And as a father, having raised two daughters to adulthood, and another daughter on her way, and then a desire as a parent to just protect your children, just to protect them from any way you can, and then recognizing at some point you have to let it go. And thinking about this on an airplane.
Right, yeah. Thank you, Houghton. Yeah, actually, you know, went through a period where after flying and loving to travel and go places, all of a sudden, I developed this phobia, this fear of flying that was just overpowering. And when my daughter was about 2 or 3 years old, and I was like, what is happening to me? Like, why? Like, where is this coming from? And, you know, so I worked through it and I read books and I worked on myself. And then I realized that part of it was, like in the poem says, just this realization that, wow, now I'm really responsible for this little person. You know, like I can't I can't die, I can't get into an accident, I can't disappear because of this little person. And just feeling it like on such a, you know, in your bones and coming. And so, you know, I was actually, that was part of my therapy, was to write in the airplane. And this poem came about. Today, I stopped the river in its track, flying thousands of feet above the fields, rivers, lakes, highways, the Mississippi overflowing its banks, drowning everything in brown waters. I write these lines feeling vulnerable because there's nothing between me and death but a cushion of air, a pressurized cabin, some jet fuel, and those engines bearing us through the air against all logic. Today, I've got a date with life, and it takes a fucking airplane to make me face the questions, to rattle me out of my indecision, to help me decide at knife point whether I'm living alive or dying alive. Today, I stop the train. I use my grappling hook nails to anchor a plane. Today, I turn back the clock and rule the movements of the flowers, the beating of your heart, but also today, I renounce my Herculean task of directing the course of rivers so you won't get wet, so you can live and not drown. The unacceptable burden of playing God, the daily calculation, adding and subtracting, the whims of chaos, fate mother, power mother, protector of the children, ruler of cities, dynamiter of impulses, sob, quake, of everything beyond our reach. Living afraid, in hiding, cautious, never making waves, trying to go unnoticed, being very quiet, or simply not being. And today, this urge to live unbuttoned, to howl out my affection, to die in life's hands, explodes from my throat. Mother love is pouring out all my holes like crazy, soaking me with milk each morning. How do I muffle this love for part of me that isn't me, but we're one? This skirting of life's dangers, this not going out of the house, mustn't let her catch cold, mustn't let him grab her in the park, mustn't let the sun strike her at a bad angle. Today, I give up my tennis shoes, swords, bandages, the helm. Mind and reason can't explain the soul. They're mute as wrinkled stones. The mind, a thread we cut, doesn't quite reach. Surrender, nestle in the heart. In the heart, there's room for everything. Don't ask, accept. Impossible to change the wind's course from my window seat. All I've got is trust, the hope of coming home, the arms of the man waiting, the sweet look of that girl I'm responsible for.
Wow. How many children do you have?
Thank you. I have two. And
a boy and a girl.
Yeah, boy and a girl, and, you know, they're almost 5.5 years apart. The girl is the older one, the son, the younger one. And, you know, after a time period, the fear of flying disappeared, you know, and then one day I was fine after working on it. But, and, you know, I guess I just came to a place where it was like, okay. We need to surrender that need for control because there's so many things we cannot control.
As much as we want to control those things, especially to protect our children.
Right.
So what do you have planned next?
Well, I'm working on a new poetry manuscript that I've already done the first draft or first, second draft. And it's going to be a project with a poet from Fort Worth, Tammy Gomez, who used to live in Austin. She's a performance poet. And we want to do a duo volume. of our poetry, and Sandra Cisneros has offered to curate it, and we have a publisher, Sarah Van Books, that is going to take a look after she organizes the material. So yeah, really looking forward to that. I've been also friends with Tammy for over, you know, 3 decades, and we have been like collaborators, conspirators, just like really, you know, poet artist friends from far and near and throughout our different stages of life. So really excited about that project.
Well, Liliana, it's been quite a pleasure to read your work, to read your translation of Sandra Cisneros' novel. And I guess I shouldn't say read your translation, but read the English part of the Sandra Cisneros novel, Remember My Muertita.
Right, yes.
And your book, like I said, Codex Love, Bendito Tenero, it's just such a great combination of eroticism, love, family, just such a holistic look of life.
Ooh, thank you so much. Thank you for reading it and for your comments. And thank you so much for having me in your show.
And it's been a real pleasure to have you as a guest on Diverse Voices Book Review. Liliana Valenzuela, and her website is lilianavalenzuela.com. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions. You can follow the show on social media. Under Facebook and Instagram, it's Diverse Voices Book Review, or Twitter under @DiverseBooksHay.